Welcome to episode 20 of the Fredcast for the week of June the 5th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. We've got a lot of news for you this evening, including reports that Armstrong did not dope in 1999. First few stages of the Dauphiné Libéré. A preview of the upcoming tour of Switzerland. You're going to find out what kind of sanction Gilberto Simoni is going to have after his comments at the end of the Giro d'Italia. Liberty Seguro's team has a new name and a new sponsor. An update on Saul Raisin. An update from one of our listeners on cycling as therapy. A couple of new and notables on the net. Some upcoming rides. And of course, some shoutouts. So sit back, relax. And if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and I'm pleased to be opening the news this week with what looks to be a positive story on the doping front in professional cycling. Last week, a Dutch investigator's report cleared Lance Armstrong of the allegations that he was doping during the 1999 Tour de France. In fact, the report called the accusations, quote, completely irresponsible, and then that sets the stage for a possible tribunal to consider legal and ethical misconduct sanctions against the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA. Now, we've talked about this case frequently on the Fredcast, so if you're a longtime listener, you may remember that the French sports newspaper L'Equipe reported in August that six of Lance's urine samples from 1999 came back positive for the endurance-boosting hormone EPO when they were retested in 2004. Now, in October, the UCI appointed a Dutch lawyer to investigate the case and report back its findings. The Dutch investigator said, in his 132-page report, that it, quote, exonerates Lance Armstrong completely with respect to alleged use of doping in the 1999 Tour de France. The report said that tests on the samples were conducted improperly, and therefore they fell short of scientific standards, and that it was, quote, completely irresponsible to suggest that the results constitute evidence of anything. The report also criticized the record-keeping that was involved and the lack of a proper chain of custody, which would thereby guarantee the pristine nature of those samples. Now, Lance, for his part, has repeatedly denied using any banned substances in any of his athletic endeavors. And he released a report saying, quote, today's comprehensive report makes it clear that there is no truth to that accusation. I have now retired, but for the sake of all athletes still competing who deserve a level playing field and a fair system of drug testing, the time has come to take action against these kinds of attacks before they destroy the credibility of WADA and, in turn, the international anti-doping system. Now, you may not know that WADA and the UCI have been locked in a pretty bitter feud for a long time. And so, of course, Dick Pound, who is the director of WADA, came back and criticized the report, saying, quote, there was no interest in determining whether the samples Armstrong provided were positive or not. We were afraid of that from the very beginning. Now, Pound's criticism is that the report actually looked at the procedures that were involved, but that the investigator really doesn't have any scientific experience and therefore really doesn't have a standing to determine whether or not the tests that were conducted were proper or improper. For its part, the newspaper L'Equipe is standing by its report, saying that, quote, there is nothing to retract from the revelations. For our part, we remain convinced of the need to battle without compromise against the mafia-like tendencies that still and always threaten the sport of cycling. Both in the method and the substance, L'Equipe stands firm. So, sounds very clear as far as Lance is concerned, and as far as the UCI is concerned. It remains to be seen whether or not indeed a tribunal will be convened to consider sanctions against WADA, and whether, of course, there would be any legal challenges to the story that L'Equipe came out with. But at least for the time being, it does sound like a positive result on the doping front. And considering things that have happened over the last couple of weeks and months, it is nice to finally have what appears to be a positive result in favor of a cyclist saying that they did not dope. And considering it's Lance and somebody who has retired nearly a year ago now, I think it's time to lay this matter, as far as Lance is concerned, to rest. Well, we've talked about it several times on the Fredcast in the last couple of weeks, and that is the Dauphiné Libéré, the traditional prelude to every year's Tour de France. And this is the race that a lot of Pro Tour riders use to get themselves ready for the upcoming Tour in July. And the Dauphiné Libéré has begun. It began on June the 4th. With a 4.1 kilometer prologue. The prologue was won by the same gentleman who won the prologue in last year's Tour de France. I'll give you a second to try to remember his name. American Team CSC rider, Dave Zabriskie. Dave won it in 4 minutes and 35 seconds, just 2 seconds faster than American and Discovery Channel rider George Hincapie. Third place went to Australia's Stuart O'Grady, just 6 seconds back. Fourth, Sebastian Lang from Germany and the Gerolsteiner team, 7 seconds back. And fourth, Joost Postuma from the Netherlands and the Rabobank team at 8 seconds back. Probably the notable thing here, besides the fact that Dave Zabriskie won the race, is the fact that this was George Hincapie's first ride since he crashed in Paris-Roubaix back in April. So this was a really great result for both Hincapie and Zabriskie in the prologue of the Dauphiné, but of course there's a few days left to go after the prologue. Let's see how the riders did in stage number one. Stage one was a 207-kilometer road race and was won by German Fabian Wegmann of the Gerolsteiner team in 5 hours, 5 minutes, and 36 seconds after a breakaway with just 15 kilometers to go in the race. At the finish line, Wegmann bested Frenchman Thomas Vogler and Spaniard Igor Martinez. Now, with his time bonuses for the stage victory, this put Wegmann in the overall lead in the general classification, with Zabriskie in second, Vogler in third, Hincapie in fourth, and Martinez in fifth. Following the stage, Wegmann, who's a former Giro d'Italia king of the mountains, said, quote, "I'm quite surprised we managed to keep the sprinters at bay. It was a tough stage to do. I haven't raced for 5 weeks, so this is a good sign for the Tour de France." Now, today's stage number two was a 203-kilometer race, which was won handily by Belgian Philippe Gilbert, whom you may remember as the winner of February's Het Volk. Now, Gilbert left a breakaway of 3 riders after pulling away from them with 35 miles to go in the stage. In fact, the second place finisher, Frenchman Samuel Damoulin, was 5 minutes back, followed a few seconds later by Austrian Peter Rolick. Now, after his victory, Gilbert said that he was surprised to have won. He said, quote, "I never expected to pull off a stunt like that. I wanted to wait for Sebastian, then realized it was too dangerous. I've wanted a victory since Het Volk, and this is the first since then." Gilbert is now in first in the general classification, followed by Wegmann, Vogler, Zabriskie, and Hincapie, all of whom are about 5.5 minutes behind the leader. Now, on Wednesday, there's a 43-kilometer, very hilly time trial, just ahead of an ascent on Mont Ventoux on Thursday, and then 2 alpine stages immediately afterwards. So it seems to me that the hardest part of this race is yet to come, and it's going to be a very difficult road to victory, and I do not think that Gilbert is going to be able to hold on to the lead throughout the rest of the week. So we'll see what happens. I'll let you know next week on the next episode of the Fredcast. Now, of course, the other race that we'll be talking about next week will be the beginning of the Tour of Switzerland, and that begins June the 10th, and it goes through the 18th. And this is going to be the return of Jan Ullrich to racing following his pulling out of the Giro d'Italia with a back injury. So Jan's really not had the best of all years. Giro was his first major race. He, before that, had had some knee troubles, and then he pulls out of the Giro with back injuries. Ullrich is, of course, confident in his possibilities for success in the Tour of Switzerland as well as in his possibilities in the Tour de France. He said, quote, "The fact that I've enjoyed success in this race in the past and that I feel at ease there has influenced my decision basically to participate. Now, Ulrich did, of course, win one stage in the Giro before pulling out, but there have been a lot of doubts about Jan this year and whether or not he's actually going to be a contender in this year's Tour de France. So all eyes will definitely be on Jan as he participates in the Tour of Switzerland. We do, of course, wish him luck, and I will at least have some preliminary reports from the Tour of Switzerland on next week's show, so stay tuned. And speaking of the Giro d'Italia, you may remember that I discussed that Gilberto Simoni was a little bit upset with Giro winner Ivan Basso, and that at the end of the 20th stage of the Giro, Simoni accused Basso of looking for a bribe and getting Simoni to pay Basso in order for Basso to allow Simoni to win the stage. Following the Giro, there was quite a firestorm over these allegations, and in fact, Simoni was actually grilled for more than an hour by an Italian disciplinary commission, and the result of that is that Simoni came out and retracted his statements against Basso, and he said, quote, "I made some erroneous statements, but I didn't want to damage Basso's reputation. Certain things are part of the race." And I guess he was talking about what is a common practice of tour leaders looking for help from breakaway companions. And that's pretty much common courtesy and tradition among the riders in these major tours. But I really think that Simoni's comments went far beyond just common race courtesy. And it looks like so do a lot of those who could discipline Simoni, because in the end, it is entirely possible that he could draw a fine for his comments, or he could even be banned from participation in the upcoming Tour de France. So it remains to be seen what could happen to him, but it's pretty obvious that a lot of pressure was put on him to retract his statements, and whether or not that retraction will save him from possible sanction and possibly being banned from this year's tour remains to be seen. We'll keep an eye on the story, as I promised last week, and we'll let you know how it turns out and whether or not we're going to see Simoni in the upcoming Tour de France. And another update on a story that we talked about last week that I promised to keep you up to date on, and that is the firestorm also that's swirling around the Liberty Seguros cycling team. And you remember last week we discussed that and the fact that there are some very major allegations that go very, very high up in that organization about doping and the possibility that some doctors were involved and that the heads of the team were even involved. Well, as I told you last week, the Liberty Insurance Company withdrew their sponsorship of the team and really leaving them adrift out there in the world of professional cycling and wondering whether or not the team would even exist in time for the Tour de France. Well, in the end, they have now secured another sponsor. It's a company from Kazakhstan, and it's called Astana. And Astana has teamed up with the third-level sponsor that has always been in place with Liberty Seguros. It was actually called Liberty Seguros Worth. The new team is now called Astana Worth. And Worth is a German engineering company, and they stayed with the team even after Liberty dropped out. The question, of course, is what exactly is Astana? Well, I did some searching around the internet, and it turns out that Astana is actually the capital of Kazakhstan. And the name of the city is translated from Kazakh as, quote, the capital city. And it became the capital in September of 1995. Now, I'm frankly a little bit confused. I don't really understand why the capital of a country would necessarily want to sponsor a cycling team. And, you know, maybe I'm missing something, and perhaps some of you listeners out there can enlighten me. And if you can, go ahead. It's thefredcast@gmail.com. I don't really understand. I mean, I can't imagine that when Liberty pulled out that there was the possibility that it could all of a sudden become the Washington, D.C. cycling team, you know, or the Moscow cycling team. So I really don't understand why it's called Astana. And I'm hoping that some of you can enlighten me so that I can go out and enlighten the rest of the Fredcast listeners. But in the meantime, there is a little bit of controversy surrounding the team itself, because, of course, with the controversy swirling around Liberty Seguros and Manolo Saiz and the doctors that were involved in the possible doping allegations. There's some question out there as to whether or not the team will even be able to get a license from the UCI in order to be able to continue on the Pro Tour this year. For his part, team rider Alexander Vinokourov has said that it seems to him that it doesn't matter who the sponsor is and really who's leading the team. The team itself does have a license, and it just seems to him that the UCI should continue licensing the team. So, of course, there's more to this story over the weeks and months to come, and we'll keep you posted. But for now, it is the Astana Wirth team, no longer Liberty Seguros. Another story we've been covering a lot here on the Fredcast is the story of Crédit Agricole professional cyclist Saul Raisin. I am happy to tell you, and I have been happy to tell you over the last couple of weeks, that Saul is steadily recovering from the brain hemorrhage that nearly killed him and caused physicians to put him in a drug-induced coma for almost 2 weeks. And he's getting a lot of help and support from his family and friends around the world. And Channel 11 News in Atlanta, Georgia, recently visited Saul in the rehabilitation center where he's receiving treatment. And I want to thank Carmichael Training Systems for giving me the heads up on this one. And I put a link in the show notes to the video that you can go ahead and watch. And if you click on the link, it will open up with Windows Media Player. You'll be able to see Saul himself and how he's doing in the rehabilitation center. Now, the other thing that CTS is doing that I think is really cool, a lot of us, as we've talked about before, wear the Livestrong wristband. Well, now there's a new wristband out there, and this one is in the colors of the Crédit Agricole team, and it is to support Saul Raisin and his rehabilitation efforts. And 100% of the proceeds of the sale of these wristbands go back to the Shepherd Center, which is an Atlanta-based catastrophic care hospital treating people with spinal cord injuries, brain injuries, MS, and other neuromuscular diseases and neurological problems. So again, I've put a link in the show notes to that as well, so that you can go on there if you like and buy yourself a wristband for $3 and give a little bit back to the center that's helping out a cyclist in need. In a related note, and possibly in a nod to the fact that they're expecting Saul's going to be back up on the winner's podium at some point in the future and needing some champagne, Crédit Agricole actually purchased the French champagne maker Tattinger last week for 660 million euros. That's about $846 million. And they bought it from the U.S. investment company Starwood Capital. Starwood, as you may or may not know, is the luxury hotel group. And actually, when they bought Tattinger from the Tattinger family, the reason they did so was because they wanted to retain control of Tattinger's hotel division. Now, the deal, of course, has to go through the required antitrust approval, and that's expected to take place by the end of August. So hopefully by the time that Saul is ready to get back on his bike out on the roads and get back up on a victory stand, he'll be able to toast his victory with some Crédit Agricole-owned Tattinger champagne. And that's going to do it for a short but very professional race-oriented newscast for this evening. Now, before I get ahead with the features in this week's show, I just wanted to send out a quick thanks to all of you who have recently clicked that donation button on the homepage at thefredcast.com, sending in some donations to support the Fredcast. I really appreciate those of you that have done that. I just want you to know that all of the money that is set in through those donations goes directly back into the show to help support what I'm doing here with the Fredcast. So, you know what? If you appreciate what I'm doing, if you enjoy listening to the Fredcast, and I know that there's a few thousand of you out there that really do, I really would appreciate it if you'd go ahead and click that donation button from time to time, send a couple of bucks toward the Fredcast so that I can keep continuing doing what I'm doing and continuing to improve the Fredcast week after week, month after month. I really, really appreciate those of you who have sent in those donations, and just want to say a very, very big thank you. Okay, a few weeks ago we talked about a letter that appeared in a magazine about how cycling can really be therapy in a lot of different ways. And we heard the story of the gentleman who wrote that letter, and then of course I got the email from that same person, which was really great. We also heard about the police officer who is a Fredcast listener and how cycling was therapy for him. I've told you how I use it for therapy. It's a way for me when I get home at night to really unwind, put the workday behind me and really get on to relaxing. And I think I've also talked about the fact that I do some of my best thinking and some of my best problem solving when I'm out on a ride, because it really allows me to clear my head. And Helen, who's a listener in New Zealand, sent me in an email and told me about her experiences with cycling as therapy, and I encouraged her to send it to me in an audio comment so that she could share with you in her own voice how cycling has been therapy for her. So here is listener Helen from New Zealand.
Hi, I thought I'd drop you my thoughts on cycling as therapy since it's still a topic of mention. I've always been an advocate of cycling for both physical and psychological fitness and as a recovery aid. My story combines both. 2 years ago, I was having a pretty tough time. In the space of 3 months, I'd had 2 cancer scares and 1 brush with MS. My father had died suddenly, and I dropped my new baby on her head, necessitating a fast trip to the hospital. Cycling had given me an outlet through all of this, a place to escape the fear and the grief. It enabled me to level myself, and after an hour or two, I'd get off the bike and be a vaguely normal mum to my 2 kids. One day in the middle of our cold, damp winter, I received a redundancy letter. It was expected, but still not much fun. And I thought, well, at least I get to do more riding. So I headed out for a ride, as therapy, you know. Coming down a hill, I turned a corner and encountered a car on my side of a narrow road. Swerving to avoid the vehicle, I lost control on the slippery surface and hit the road hard. Thankfully, the driver stayed around, I couldn't move, and called my family and the ambulance. In the hospital, an incredibly tired and very young-looking doctor read my x-rays and cheerfully sent me home with a packet of Tylenol and instructions to take it easy for a week or so, with a diagnosis of bruising and making sure I got those scrapes well healed. So I sat on the couch and watched the Tour de France. After a couple of days, I decided the week was nearly up and I really should be feeling much better by now. Getting on my stationary bike seemed like a good idea. The problem was I could hardly move, and I was still in a lot of pain. To this day, I don't know how I actually got on my Cannondale that first time. At the time, I said, I'd rather be in labour. I couldn't even make my legs go around, just backwards and forwards in a semicircle. It was therapy, though. I at least felt able to face the pain of moving around the house after improving the blood flow to my legs, and I also felt significantly less sorry for myself. This carried on for a few days, a bit more each time, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, gradually building up to about 15 minutes. A week after the accident, I thought I should be better now. The problem was, I wasn't. After another week, I was still on the stationary bike, still getting good therapy for my head and heart, but still in a hang of a lot of pain. After another week, I was a bit better and able to ditch the crutches. Yay! Nearly 2 months on, I could almost walk normally, but was still in pain, and my body looked really strange on the bike, all uneven and twisted. I couldn't understand why I wasn't better, and it was getting hard to convince the insurance company that they should keep paying me, as I couldn't look for a job. I looked forward every day to sitting on my bike, looking out the window and listening to music. And again, an escape from the frustration and the uncertainty. While I sat there, I could feel my mind returning to a sense of equilibrium in a way I find difficult to access any other way. Finally, my physical therapist suggested an x-ray to find the source of the twisting. About half an hour after the x-rays were done, my doctor called to ask me if I'd ever had a fractured pelvis prior to the recent trauma. When I replied no, he said, well, you have now 3 serious fractures in your pelvis and a broken hip. It was pretty hard to know what to say. I went through a whole other loop at that point. Naturally, the medicos were all over me to assess the impact of the diagnosis and treatment for such a serious injury. One of New Zealand's top orthopaedic surgeons was responsible for the reassessment. He was staggered at my recovery in 6 weeks without immobilisation or narcotics for the pain. He couldn't believe I'd had the will to get on my bike, much less turn the pedals. In the final analysis, he said the bike had been the best therapy and would have helped the healing of the hip fracture in particular. Now a bit on this, cycling is still therapy. Cycling helps me level myself, enabling me to keep the worries of the world in perspective. But I've also come to appreciate that it's more. It's fundamentally where I relax. When I relax, I get ideas. Cycling is where I'm creative, where I solve problems. keep my focus on the future. So it's winter here and I've been out for a 2-hour ride this morning. I didn't see a soul. The trails are wet and slippery. I've been listening to the Fredcast on my iPod and admiring the view of our very beautiful and totally unique city. I've got a whole bunch of new ideas of things to do or make or get stuck into. Is cycling therapy? Indeed it is.
Thank you, Helen, for the very, very interesting story on how you use cycling as therapy. And there's a lot of facets there to the way in which cycling has been therapy for Helen, whether it is, as she says, leveling herself when she goes out for a ride, or whether trying to just sort of get over the shock of getting the redundancy letter, or even helping her heal her hip when she was injured. So a lot of different ways that cycling is therapy for Helen, a lot of different ways that cycling is therapy for a lot of Fredcast listeners from the voicemails that I've gotten and the letters that I've gotten. This topic has really touched a nerve. And hey, I'll keep it going as long as you like. So if any of the rest of you have any other comments, or you'd like to send in some audio about how cycling is therapy for you, or how it's been therapy for perhaps somebody in your family, I would love to hear it, and I will continue this going as long as you listeners would like. So, Helen, thank you again for sending your story, and keep going out there and riding. I know it's wintertime down there in New Zealand, but oftentimes, you know, you can have a nice crisp winter day, and it can be an even better ride than some of your best rides in the summer. So thanks a lot, Helen. We appreciate it, and we look forward to getting more cycling as therapy comments from other Fredcast listeners in the future.
So you purchased your nice new bicycle. Things couldn't be any better. It's shifting beautifully. It's braking comfortably. It's nice and quiet and smooth.
What you're listening to is the introduction to a mountain bike maintenance and repair DVD from SideEffects.tv, the same people who brought us Greg Batante, who is a Fredcast listener and contributor. You remember that Greg gave us some contributions from the tour of California a few months ago.
Throughout this video, we're going to go over some of the minor repair jobs that can be done at home, as well as the maintenance it takes to keep your bicycle running smoothly.
Greg sent me this DVD because he thought that it might be something that Fredcast listeners might be interested in learning about. And I have to tell you, after watching the DVD, I can tell you that whether you're a mountain biker or a road biker, this is definitely a video that you're going to find very, very interesting. What I really like about it is that this isn't flashy. This isn't a ton of crashes and downhill races and dual slaloms. What you have here is nuts and bolts information that you need in order to service your bike at home and to do those day-to-day maintenance tasks that you really don't need to take your bike to the bike shop for. The video is hosted by Shimano's pro race mechanic, Matt Eames. And Matt is the guy who goes around to the races with the Shimano trailer, helping racers and novices out there who don't have team support to make sure that their bikes are in tip-top condition before they go out on the trail and do a race. And this is filmed on location at what looks like Big Bear, California, if I'm not mistaken. And Matt takes us through some very, very important tasks. On here, you're going to find information on the proper cleaning of your bike. Also on what the right tools are that you need to have in your toolbox if you're going to be doing some of the maintenance tasks that Matt talks about.
A good set of Allen keys is the most important item to have in your toolbox. You don't want to be using SAE or American-sized Allen keys on bicycle parts that are going to be metric. You can get them into sets that'll go from 2 up to 10 millimeter, or you can have three-way versions. There are two versions of that. One is a 4, 5, and 6 millimeter, and the second is a 2, 2.5, and 3 millimeter.
Now, in addition to tools, you'll also hear Matt talk about a variety of different subjects, including various braking systems from discs and cantilever brakes, drivetrain systems, front and rear derailleur adjustments. He talks about your chain and how to properly lubricate your chain.
We're going to start out with pre-ride inspection that I do regularly prior to each ride I go out on. First thing I start with is making sure that the chain's properly lubricated. I always feel that I start out and we'll just go ahead and rotate through the system, not dumping a lot of lube on the chain. You don't want to have it dripping off. but you can see that it's covering each one of the links.
One of the things I like here is that this is a real race mechanic. This is a guy who makes a living taking care of people's bikes out there on the road when they're at races. And what I really like about the video is that he's showing us a real bike, not some Hi-Zoot racing machine that none of us can afford. And he's showing it in real-world conditions and showing you exactly what he does to make sure that these bikes are in tip-top shape. Now, another thing I really like about the video is that, of course, it's not a video at all. It's on a DVD. And what's great is that this is where DVD technology can really shine, because with a DVD, you have the opportunity of choosing each chapter that you want to go to. So this may not necessarily be something that you're going to sit down and watch from the beginning to the very end. You know, you're not going to sit there and watch every minute of it from start to finish. Instead, you're going to have a task, something that you need to do on your bike, and you're going to sit down, hit the chapter menu, and you're going to click on exactly which chapter it is that you want to watch. So maybe you're having a drivetrain problem, and so you click on drivetrain and you watch that and you follow the steps that are outlined there, and then you go out into your garage and you do that work that you've just seen. Or maybe you're having a brake problem, and so you click on the brake chapter. Whatever you need to do when it comes to maintenance on your bike, again, whether it's a road bike or a mountain bike, a lot of these same tips do apply. And so Matt goes into what kind of lubes to use in different situations, and a lot of questions that a lot of us have when it comes to doing maintenance on our bikes. Now, if I had any complaint about the video or about the DVD, it would be that while the majority of the advice that's given there is generic and applicable to any mountain bike, any road bike that's out there, some of the advice that's given is Shimano specific and for specific model numbers of Shimano equipment. And so I guess that would be probably my only gripe about the video. Otherwise, very well shot. The sound is excellent. The lighting is really nice. And again, you're getting a lot of really, really good tips on this video. Now, you can get the video at a lot of different places. A lot of your independent bike shops are going to carry it. You can also get it online, and I've even put a link in the show notes to the Bike Nash Bar website along with Bike Nash Bar's product number for this video. So if you like to do a little bit of maintenance on your bike, but you're a little bit timid because you don't really have the training, this is probably a very good video for you to learn about mountain bike and road bike maintenance, and something that you will probably have for a very long time and be using as a reference as you go through and clean and maintain your own bike at home. So this again is from Side Effects Productions, and that's at sideeffects.tv. I've put a link in the show notes to their website, as well as again to the Bike Nash Bar website, where you can go out and buy the video for yourself. That's Mountain Bike Maintenance and Repair DVD. Next up, just a couple of new and or notables on the net. And the first one is very similar to something that I mentioned a few weeks ago for the Giro d'Italia. This is the Fantasy Tour de France website. Basically, the same people who gave you the Fantasy Giro d'Italia, where you can go out and choose your racers and set up your fantasy cycling team for this year's Tour de France. And you can compete against other people who are putting their teams together. I've put a link in the show notes to that. I did it for the Giro. I didn't do very well. I guess I'm not very good at picking a race team. So I'll probably do it again for the Tour de France. It's kind of fun to do it and see how your racers do. So go ahead and check that out. Click the link in the show notes. See what kind of a team manager you are, because quite frankly, I'm not a very good one. The other thing that I wanted to mention that's new on the net, you may have heard of a website called YouTube, and that's YOUTUBE.com. And YouTube is someplace where amateurs, people can go out and post their own videos up on the internet pretty much for all the world to see. And somebody has created a YouTube group specifically for bicycle videos. And I've put a link in the show notes to that. There's not a whole lot of videos there now, but hopefully if we spread the word, we might be able to get more people to put their bike videos on there. We might see some nice videos of some really great quality. So click the link in the show notes for that and go ahead and take a look at those bike videos that are out there. Now, upcoming rides coming up in the next few weeks. I got an email from listener Kendall from Eagle Mountain, Utah. And Kendall sent me the email. He says, "I have a ride to tell you about. Not as much for the ride, but for who is riding. On Saturday, June the 10th, the Golden Spike Century in Brigham City, Utah. And this ride is part of the Tour de Cure in support of the American Diabetes Association. Good cause. What makes this notable is that Greg LeMond, who is the honorary Tour de Cure chairman, will be riding with us up here. It should be a memorable ride. So for those of you that are in the area of Brigham City, Utah, this is the Golden Spike Century. It takes place June the 10th. Which is this coming weekend. I've put a link in the show notes. That would be a great opportunity not only to have a beautiful ride, not only to help support a very, very important cause, but also have the possible opportunity of riding with one of my cycling heroes, Greg LeMond. So click the link in the show notes and go ahead and check out the Golden Spike Century. And thanks again to listener Kendall for sending that in. Now, the next upcoming event really isn't so much of a ride as a race, a festival, sort of really a happening. And this is the ride in Northern California called the Tour de Ney. And it takes place June the 22nd through the 24th. And if you're not familiar with the Tour de Ney, I've put a link in the show notes to their website. And I think that this is something, if you are a cycling fan and into not only cycling and racing, but coffee and sort of a festival atmosphere and sort of a funky, fun, cool event, the Tour de Ney is the one for you. And this will be the 14th annual Tour de Ney, taking place up in Northern California, and something that I think you should definitely check out. It is very, very interesting and a great event. And as a side note, you should also know that the same folks who brought us the Mountain Bike Maintenance and Repair DVD, Side Effects Productions, also have a great DVD, 45-minute long DVD on last year's Tour de Ney, and I'll put links in the show notes on where you can find that as well. So that's the Tour de Ney coming up in just a couple of weeks, June the 22nd through the 24th, up near Lake Tahoe in Northern California. Coming up next, just a couple of shout-outs for you this week. I've got a lot of emails, but unfortunately, I can only give a couple of shout-outs every week. The first one goes to Doug from Utah, and I really liked one of the things that he said in his email, and I just wanted to send him a shout-out and say thanks a lot. He said in his email that he really enjoys the Fredcast, but he said, quote, "The problem I have is I get so focused on the gear and news, I've actually caught myself just cruising along, listening with a big smile on my face. I've actually waved at oncoming cyclists. My average miles per hour is suffering, but I'm enjoying my rides more." So sort of a good news, bad news thing there for Doug. So thanks a lot, and I'm glad to hear that you're actually becoming a little bit more of a friendly cyclist. You know, it's okay to cruise along every once in a while. Just be careful when you're listening to the Fredcast as you're out there riding. Next shout-out, and actually answering a question, goes to Steve from the UK. And he said, in his email, "A while back, January, I think, Garmin announced that their training center software would be available for the Mac in spring of this year. I guess spring has turned to summer now, but I can't find it on their site. I know you mentioned this development in a previous Fredcast. Have you heard any more about this?" And I know I've mentioned this on the Fredcast a couple of times because it's something that I'm anxiously awaiting. All I can tell you is a lot of these hardware and software suppliers are notorious for giving you a date. They'll tell you it's going to be ready in the spring of 2006. And you're absolutely right, Steve. Spring comes and spring goes. Summer comes and goes. You're well into fall or winter before the product ever shows up. I've seen this with Garmin before when they've had new hardware announcements where they're just a little bit optimistic about when that product is going to come out. So it looks like they're doing the same thing with the software. Spring is still around for another couple of weeks. Obviously, not until around June 21st does summer actually show up. So they still have a couple of weeks to release it. Now, I've talked to a product engineer at Garmin who told me that they do actually have a whole Mac development team who's working on the software. And I'm hoping that even with the advent of the new Intel-based Macs, where people can actually run Windows right on their Macintosh computers natively, I'm still hoping that Garmin's going to continue with this Mac development. It seems like they're going to. As soon as I hear that this product is ready, I promise, Steve, I will let you and the rest of the Fredcast listeners know, and hopefully give you at least a mini review as I try it out with my Garmin Edge on my new MacBook Pro. So I will definitely let you know when it's out and what I think of it when it does come out. So thanks a lot, Steve, for the email. I appreciate it very much. For the rest of you, I do like to get your emails and like to get your audio comments. It's very, very easy to stay in touch with the Fredcast. You can use the forums at forums.thefredcast.com. Of course, you can send an email or an audio comment anytime to my email address, which is thefredcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can always send a voicemail to the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. And of course, check the website from time to time because I do occasionally post things like the extra added links that I put in last week for the elevation map creation tools. And of course, the website is www.thefredcast.com. Now, just a side note before we get to tonight's PodSafe cycling music, this is show number 20. I'll be recording show number 21 next week, but after that, I will be off for at least one, perhaps 2 weeks, because I'm taking my family on a vacation and I am not taking the computer or the podcasting gear with me. So apologize for that, but expect that I'll be off for at least one, maybe 2 weeks. In the meantime, please do go ahead and continue sending your emails in, and I will try to answer those as soon as I get back, and I will get another Fredcast up as quickly as I can when my vacation is over. But of course, I appreciate you and your understanding while I take my family on a very well-deserved vacation. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling music comes to us, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's music is a little bit of a departure for us, but I think you'll notice that I'm getting a little bit into the vacation mood. This is sort of a tropical, beachy-themed song. The song is called Ocean. It's by the artist Zach Ashton, and I've put a link in the show notes to Zach's podshow.com site. If you like the music that you hear, I hope you'll go to the site and consider purchasing the music from Zach or from any of the other artists that we featured here on the Fredcast. And if you do, please let them know that you heard it on the Fredcast, because they always like to know that there are podcasters out here supporting independent music. That's going to do it for tonight's show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. And thanks for telling your friends and family about the show. And of course, for voting on Podcast Alley. I really do appreciate it. I will see you all next week. In the meantime, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride. Seen you in so long.